This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat.
Welcome to episode 433 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
This episode, we'd like to thank co-producer Rebecca.
And now, on to our episode discussions. Just doesn't ring as well, but it'll work. This week, we are discussing episode 3 of season 7 of Outlander, entitled Death Be Not Proud.
So we have another cold open. There is a very special delivery to... I almost wrote to the Mackenzies. It actually is for the Mackenzies, but it's not to the Mackenzies. It was the Mance, right?
Yeah, they sent it to the Mance.
Mm-hmm. So it was the Mance, but it was our Fiona, who I don't think we know Fiona's last name because she's married to Ernie now, so I don't know. But anyway, so it's a delivery for Jem, who is blah, 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 who knows how old right now. It's an interesting take how the box got to them. Again, not saying one is better than the other. It's similar in that, yes, a box was prepared for them. In the book, there are like, we find out, I read it several times, but not until we did the read-along did I realize. Jamie and Claire, now that the cat's out of the bag, right? We can talk about letters. Mm-hmm. Letters in general, we won't talk about future letters, but the fact that they exist is widely known now. It's a free-for-all. There's a lot of letters, or a decent amount of letters, and we may or may not... Okay, this is not a spoiler. Unless it happens in the show, then sorry. I don't think they're going to do that. I really don't. If there was a delivery person taking this much care to deliver a nice and shiny box to the manse, no, they're not going to do that three times. No. There's really no need, right? There's truly not a need. If they've got the box and it was successful, why do Stars need to go... It's not going to happen. So in the book... Because Jamie and Claire didn't know, like, you know, exactly where they'd be or when they'd be or whatever, they copied out. Once they had all the letters, however many, they made two copies of each. So they had three total, the original and two copies. And they separated them out into three different boxes. And if I'm not mistaken, one went, I believe, to the manse. And then one, and they all worked for Jem, right? But then two went to different safe deposit boxes or banks in Edinburgh. So, yeah, again, it's kind of nice. It's kind of a nice touch that they did that because you want to cover your bases. Okay. Then we get into the, title, blah, 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 song, music sequence, which seemed normal. I didn't notice anything new or different. And then we get the opening title card slash it was a video. It wasn't static as card or card would be static. It's a video, but it stands in for the card. It's I'm guessing our new Jem. It could be one of the older Jems. He looked a little taller. He didn't look old, like old, much older, but he looked taller than the little boys, right? From the back, at least. And we see like a, not quite a three-quarter profile, so you don't see it a ton. But you see like from the back, you see it from his back left. So you see the nose, but you don't see, or barely the nose. You see barely the back left part of the face. But it is our Jem, which if you did not know, is truly outrageous, as Summer and I both exclaimed last week. And truly. I think we've done that before, actually. But it is Jem. And in case you didn't know, if you haven't read the books, you may not know that. I mean, or you may have guessed that. Who knows? But he was reaching for a rotary phone. So I'm guessing, first I would have said, oh, it's a 1980. Now, the show has not told us anything yet, right? In a little bit, I'll address it. Again, readdress. So yeah. So did you have anything that, were you like, oh my gosh, it's the phone? Like, did you have any reaction to that?
I mean, I saw the phone, but to be honest with you, I didn't notice the person picking it up. Yeah, I didn't notice that.
First official scene-y-weeny, we're at the manse, I'm guessing, because this is where Fiona and Ernie are. So Roger and Bree are visiting Fiona and Ernie, and mm-hmm. she brings them in a box that had come for them, or actually come for Jem. And the camera, you know, kind of before it goes into the house, it kind of pans slowly by their side yard, backyard, garden, whatever it is. And there's a good like five or six kids out there. And we know that Roger and Bree only have one of those.
They must be Fiona's.
Mandy's a teeny tiny tot.
She's not that teeny tiny anymore.
Well, she was sleeping in a stroller. So she is still teeny tiny. She's not like 3 months old anymore, but I would say she's definitely still younger than a year. And that is why I changed my notes from, oh, it's in 1980 to late 70s, because we don't know precisely. In the books, we get a little like flashback, not even flashbacks. I guess they're flashbacks for them, not for us. In the books, we get like callbacks or whatever to basically when we see the Mackenzies in the 20th century again as a family, all four of them, it is literally in 1980. Yes, they talk in the description, right? Diana does, through their eyes and through their memory, does talk about how when they first came through the stones at Ocracoke. So we get, that's how, so we got that in last episode, right? In 702, we got them waking up or coming out of traveling through Ocracoke. We don't get that in the book at all. So that was kind of cool to see at the show, right? In the book, it's only a flashback, which is fine, but it doesn't happen in real time. It happens as they're recalling it and Diana's weaving it into the story. So anyway, when we see them, when they are on our pages again, it is 1980, 100%. Now, I'm not saying Starz is going to do that. But in 1980, it's not, and I'm not trying to work any time travel year math, but we are told several times that Mandy is three. Mandy's just a three-year-old. Mandy's three. So we know, I don't know exactly, and I'm not going to look at whatever calendar. I know people has been a calendar made with like the important dates. But we know in 1980 that Mandy is three. In the book, the show may be doing it differently, right? So I still don't think this is 1980. It could be. Until they tell us otherwise, I'm going to call it's going to be late 70s.
Well, it's not the 1700s, so.
No, 1970s. Definitely 20th century. What I don't know is how old, like we haven't seen Mandy yet. Like we don't have our man. I'm sure she exists, right? We're going to see her by the fourth, hopefully by the end of the season,
right? To be fair,
right?
I didn't know we'd seen Jem. So,
yeah, but there was no little girl with curly, curly locks. Like, and they may not even find a girl that fits that. And that's okay too. But it would be too bad if they got I'm not saying a redhead is bad, but we got a show full of redheads, real and fake. And since they do their best to attempt to honor the books as possible, where it's not going to, like, you know, be too much of a hardship. So we don't know exactly the year. They haven't given it to us. I'm kind of surprised. I mean, it's enough to see them in 70s-ish clothing, because what is 1980 but 1979
but one year
clothing?
After exactly.
No, my point is 1980s clothing is the same as 1979, but a little bit later. So you're not seeing the big, it doesn't go, oh my gosh, we're in the 80s. Absolutely not. So it could be 1980.
Could you imagine if all of a sudden it was like,
we had
like
to change 1987? By
law. Like if all of a sudden it became, it was like 1987 in the history of things and everyone's in neon colors and splatters and all kinds of weird bows in their hair and giant bangs.
No thanks. Oh, like right now or the characters?
The characters.
Oh, that
like
would,
if the characters.
I don't know. That's funny. I mean, Mandy would be like 14.
No. I will say that
Jem would be
Brianna did have bangs. So she did cut
some
bangs.
She absolutely did. So the kiddos are playing outside. Like I said, we do get a mention of Mandy. They're saying that she's doing well. Or they say that she's doing well. And I'm guessing, we have no proof because they did not show us anything, but I'm guessing she's the baby in the stroller because that someone, I don't know, I think it was Ernie because Ernie's outside with the kids. Ernie was watching the kids and he's someone, I believe it's him, kind of pushing
the
stroller.
But what if she's three?
In a stroller?
She might not be in the stroller. That could be one of Fiona's kids.
That is true.
You kept talking about how it was all threes, and now I'm like, what if she's three?
We'll have to go back then and see if there were any little girls. Again, it doesn't mean Starz kept to it, but we'll have to go back and see in and among those kids running around if any of them had looked around three, whatever, but had curly black hair. So I did not look that far into it. So yeah, so my guess is, and I, as always, can be very wrong. My guess is because we're seeing them apparently, and something in the language too, in the script, and I don't remember the exact wording, but something they also said is that she's I think something along the lines of Mandy's doing better now, or she's well. That doesn't mean she can't be three, but usually you don't wait till someone's 3 years old and they had like a heart surgery at 6 months. To say she's better now. So I'm guessing it's been maybe no more than 6 months since they've traveled. I don't think it's been a year.
Time will tell. I like their car.
It was cute. I was like, where's the little orange one, my dude? But time will tell, as you said. So yeah, I think it's between 78 and 79, probably like 77, 78. And then they open the letters and the first letter, and we have Jamie's VO reading the letter, "We are alive." Onto the ridge, or back to the ridge. Jamie is, so basically, okay, the end of 702, the very last shot was a very wide shot. That is the house blowing up, right?
I was surprised they even tried to put that out, given how big that fireball was.
Right? Given how big that ding-dong house is, which is redonkulonkus.
Well, it's not even that. It's like, because the fire wasn't just in one spot. The fire was, it blew through the whole house.
Yes, exactly.
It exploded out, not like imploding. It was an external explosion that hit every level of the first floor. So it was like, then they even bothered to try to put it out with buckets of water. I was like, come on, guys. I mean.
So dear listener, Summer can, I think I'm wrong. I mean, and I'm saying this on purpose, but I do think she's wrong. You're not wrong what you just said. I think I'm wrong in what I'm about to say, but I'm saying it anyway because I think it's funny. So Summer, along with a lot of Americans, and maybe people in the world, who knows, are using, have added a word.
Wow.
I've added a word to the vocabulary in the last week, and that word is implosion.
I've said implosion in my life.
I know. I just told you. I knew I was wrong. It's like, making me laugh. Because as soon as you said it imploded and then it exploded, I was like, girlfriend, you got it on the mind too. But no.
I said it didn't implode. It exploded.
I have been. It's less now than it was last week. Because let's be honest. Last week was like balls to the wall. I could not stop reading about or
no,
watching
you couldn't.
Her.
And you also couldn't stop texting me about it. And sending me all the updates.
But I stopped like the last
now.
4 days.
I'm talking about during the ordeal.
During the heyday. Yeah. So I agree. So, okay, the end of 702 was a very wide shot of the very
explosion.
Big house exploding. And now the first shot of the ridge, they go a little bit back in time, right? Because if it had just exploded and they picked up there, because they were already like, you know, yelling or trying to run out. That's what
they didn't show us them
for.
Trying to get out.
Correct. So this week, so they went back a tiny bit in time, and we see that Jamie is helping Mrs. Bug out and others. Ian shows up. I wrote, that's convenient, my dude. Like, you where have you been? Although it wouldn't have, like, yeah, he couldn't have helped anything. And yeah, Summer's right. No amount of water will put out that fire. Like, it is kind of funny. And I did think, how brutal of Bear to use the ridge theme here.
But it was
like,
more sedate.
It
was more sedate, though. I mean,
it was the most ironic use of the ridge.
I want you to know that he played it so many different ways that there was a certain point where I thought to myself, is that the ridge theme? That's the ridge theme?
You are sure. You are fine.
Just because
as long as it wasn't in 20th century Scotland, it was the ridge theme, if you thought it was.
Was it? Because I am second guessing myself. It's like when you look at a word too long and it's.
Or you say a word too many times and it starts to sound like something that is absolutely preposterous.
Yes.
So it's not. Oh, and then after they're like, we realize we survived and we're going to lose the house. Claire says, wait, Claire? Claire or Jamie? I think it was Claire. Claire says, it's not January. So Roger and Bree did change the past. And this
did
is something
though?
That Summer, you and that line. I remember editing last week between did they though or choices were made. It's like it's the way of saying absolutely diddle squat. Well, they definitely changed the type of fire because if Brianna had not come back and made, as this is the next scene, if Brianna had not gone back and made matches, that exact fire would not have happened.
No.
Fire on the ridge absolutely would have happened because it had already happened, right? It happened first before they went back. So yeah, all this deep talk of time travel can like get your head and your brain in knots. So yes. And so that, speaking of that, we go straight into the next scene, which is Robert and Bran.
No.
Roger and Bree.
There you go.
What came first? The chicken or the egg? The matches or the ether? Roger's like, it was your matches. And she was like, it was mama's ether. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter.
You're right. But the ether is the constant. There was no guarantee there was going to be matches. There was always going to be ether. And ether was always a component of said fire. Now,
we don't know that. We don't know that. There was no report in that thing that someone put in the newspaper that it was an ether fire.
It's the only thing really flammable. Come on.
I'm not saying it wasn't. I'm saying we don't know, because all we get is the fact that they died in their house fire before Roger and Bree went back.
Roger and Ree?
Oh, stop. But I thought it was funny that they're going back and forth. And I think in the end, I don't really think it matters. And maybe this is where you're going. But in the end, while we do not know for sure, we cannot say in the first quote unquote go around in the fire that was reported that to have killed them. The whole reason that Brianna went back, right? In the fire that they read about. There's literally nothing reported except that they died in a house fire and their house burned down on the ridge. That's all we know. It could absolutely have been because ether caught fire. It could have been that, it could have been arson. We just don't know. However, there's the good thing about ether is whether it was involved in the fire or not. The common denominator with the ether is Claire, right? Claire would have loved to have been able to. I think she would have always, regardless of whether Brianna went back, she would have always ultimately tried to find a way to help her patients. And that I think eventually she would have come up on the idea of, maybe I'd like to try and make ether. Let's see what I can do. So even though we have no evidence that that happened the quote unquote first time around before things were changed, I think because it's Claire and because of her vocation as a surgeon, as a doctor, as a healer, the ether would have very, very likely been in her future anyway. Yeah. Then I think if you had to give more weight to the other, what is the one thing that could not have been done without time travel? That's the matches. Well, okay.
Claire is a time traveler.
Yeah, but hold on. Claire was back. My point is, okay, what could not have been done without Brianna traveling back?
Yes.
Matches. So yes, I think I come down on Roger's side on that. At the end, they're both right. It doesn't really matter. They got it done. But I think because
choices were made.
Okay. That means Summer's ready to go on. We're back to the ridge. There's a lot of stuff here. Holy monkeys. Okay, let me ask you this. I'm still going to go back to the, quote-unquote, chronological order for the episode. I want to know, because it's not a spoiler, and we know it didn't happen, so I'm just curious. Were you disappointed at all that we didn't get to see Mandy or Jem? Because you didn't know that we saw Jem at all. But were you expecting to see them, at least, see them playing or something? I was hoping.
I don't think I expected one way or the other.
Okay.
I think that including it in this episode would have probably made it more distracting, more of a distraction than a focus point. So because what they were doing is ultimately more to do with the letters. I think they left the kids out because kids tend to chew scenery and take.
I was wondering, and I may have a note on this for later on. I was wondering since, yes, we'll talk about the scene later when we get to it. However, because of how the episode ended, for the McKenzies, right? Mm-hmm. All we need is one. There is a line in there, something about when we go back to Boston, blah, 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 blah. So hold your horses. They were not planning on moving to Scotland. This was not a move. This was a trip or a visit, number one. Number two, in the end, it doesn't matter because things change, right? Like the way it ended is going to get us where we need to be. But that was the first difference. A first difference. Another one I noticed or thought I was aware of was, why would they visit? Like, how did they know to go to the manse? Like, obviously it made sense to go to the manse.
Well, my assumption, and this is where my brain filled in the blanks, is that they got back into contact with Fiona. He probably still had some stuff at the manse. So they contacted them and they were like, oh, you should come by. We have this box. Because they've been holding on to it for Lord knows how long.
That makes sense. I forgot that. I mean, yes, I know people can like contact people through letters and stuff. I mean, she very likely, or she, Roger, my guess is that phone number never changed. So Roger probably obviously still knew it by heart, right? So yeah. So I think they made it to Ocracoke. They made their way north, found Dr. Abernathy. And, did what they needed to do to get Mandy taken care of. and got established or semi-reestablished in Boston to some extent, because it's been probably, my guess is they've been there at this point 3 to 6 months. I could be wrong, but I don't think more than 6 months, just because of the way they said she's better now. I don't think you talk like that 3 years down the line, but who knows? Anyway, I'm thinking 3 to 6 months. I could be wrong. And then for some reason, not that they don't necessarily need a reason, but I think it makes sense, even if they're not going to be in Scotland, like they're not planning to move there, it does make sense to reach out and say, hey, I just wanted to let you know we're back. Because we're back doesn't mean like I'm back in town, although that is true too. It's like we did this big old shenanigan bandigan and we back. And look, we pushed out two babies. So we've had a time. She's like, oh, you've been sick. Exactly. You've been successful in your hot minute. So yeah, it could just literally be reestablishing connection, right? Because that's one of the things that is the worst for them is besides Joe and the Abernathys, they have no one. And I don't mean that they're friendless, but their community was in the 18th century, right? And so reaching out, even if it's not to stay, reaching out to Fiona, making that connection, and then she's like, oh, yeah, good to hear from you. Guess what I got? You'll never guess what came to my door. And then it just made sense for them because it was like a freaking box. Like they're like, oh, no, we're going to, you know, I wouldn't, because you don't know what it is. But the fact that it has their son's name on it and she didn't even know, she saw the name of their child very likely before they even told her that they had a child named Jem. My guess. So once I am guessing, because Fiona didn't necessarily know they were back, how would she have? She would have no idea, right? So I'm guessing Roger or Bree reached out, probably Roger. Roger reached out to the manse, got a hold of her. She's like, oh, well, I got a box for, well, anyway, in a conversation, it had to come out that they had Jem.
Or secondary option, they discussed the box before they went back through Ocracoke with Claire and Jamie. So they knew to contact Fiona to say, hey, did you get a box?
Okay. And that's very fair. But actually, no, that doesn't speak against to what I said. They absolutely could have done. No, you're right. But you're right. But see, that's even more backstory. That's more exciting even. So you're like, you're making it
that's
even
what
better.
I do.
But yeah. So regardless of what backstory we eventually get or don't get, right? Yes. It's the onus is still on because Claire like can't tell Fiona. All she can do is send her a box to be held somewhere. But yeah, so absolutely. I still think the mechanism by which they connected, though, is that Roger or Bree had to reach out to the manse, to Ernie or to Fiona. And then once that was there, and he may very well have said, and this is interesting because you're right. She could have said, oh, you know, we have this thing, but she didn't know the name. Well, she might have known. She knew Roger enough. She was all up trying to marry him and his, you know, she was all up in his stuff before he left, right? She was like trying to get on his good side, at least in the book. She probably knew his entire name. And she knew he was Mackenzie Wakefield. So it's probably not too far. She may not have known who this long last name person was, but she probably had a decent idea that it was somehow related to Roger or his family in some way, even without knowing he was back. I mean, she may not know like how it got there and all of that, right?
So it was probably having something to do with at least the before Fiona and Ernie, this was a Mackenzie residence for a very long time.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Oh, fair enough. Yes. So however the thingy happened, yes, I believe Roger or Bree, probably Roger, reached out and said, we're here. Actually, but you're right. He could have done it just to contact, to make connection again. Or, like you said, and that makes a lot of sense. If they do have a backstory, which we'll find out about hopefully later, they knew within, you know, get back, get safe, you know, get Mandy taken care of. When you are of sound mind and body and spirit and you can like exhale, call, you know, reach out to Fiona because this is what we're going to try to do. You know, the reason, okay, scroll it back for a second. The reason I'm thinking they don't have a backstory is because when they left the ridge, there was no fire. They had no intent on going to Scotland. Now, that doesn't mean that they wouldn't have said, we'll send you letters. Because, you know, sending them letters is So there could be a backstory with just letters, period, right? They don't have to go to Scotland for them to write letters. They can write letters from the Ridge. So yeah, I think they probably got some kind of backstory. So yeah, however that happened, it happened. Hopefully we'll find out. And then once they're back, yeah, my guess is they had some kind of impetus to reach out at some point when Mandy was well enough to reach out and say, hey, we're back. That's really great English. Is it possible you may have been?
Was it?
Sent right. This box. And she's like, oh my gosh. Yeah, it came like 2 years ago or whatever. It came 6 months ago or 2 months ago, whatever. And then he's like, okay, great. We'll be there next month or whatever. So yeah, I think it makes more sense that they have a little bit of a backstory than zero backstory. Even if it is simply, we love you guys. We'll miss you. And we will write letters as long as we can.
We'll find a way.
Exactly. Yes. And we'll make sure a box or whatever, blah, 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 sent to the manse. Okay. We need to go on because that's a lot. Okay. Back to the Ridge after the fire. So Jamie and Claire go through the wreckage or smoldering pieces of the big house. Claire, they're going through stuff that has been burned, but maybe not fully destroyed. Claire finds, if I'm not mistaken, Dr. Rawlings' book. It's the outside's been scorched. Or at least a small book, if not the big one that she got almost murdered for. JB finds an old clothing trunk with his old tartan in it and the piece of gold. Ian had found a small portrait of Willie, and he gives it to Jamie and he says, oh, it's a small portrait of Lord John's lad.
Mm-hmm. Dude, sure. He was so like.
And then they.
Yeah.
He was like so sideways.
Right. Like, he wasn't even trying to pretend like he thought it was
Lord
real.
Lord John's lad. No. But he was trying to, like, in his attitude and, like, tone, no. But in his words, he was trying to give Jamie an out in case Jamie was not ready to, like, admit it. But he's like, my dude, uncle, you know, come on. Yes. So Jamie's like, you can't tell anybody? He's like, I never would. Peace. Claire does some laundry. Libby?
There you go.
That's a new one. Lizzie and one of her hubs brings some stuff, mainly clothing, but yeah. And she has some bad news. We add so Chidi is missing. Mrs. Bug comes to the house ruins. Mr. Bug. Jamie asks him about the gold. What the heck? Where'd you get this? Why'd you do this? What? Because he knows he believes it's the French gold because it had a fleur-de-lis on it. And we get a little bit of this backstory, which readers will remember. So Bug tells Jamie he was Malcolm Grant's taxman when the money for Charles Stewart was sent over. It was agreed to be split into three, one a third to Dougal, a third to Hector Cameron, and a third to Malcolm Grant, each for them to use as would to help out the cause. And Malcolm Grant sent Archbug, who was his taxman. Now, he says, I don't know what Dougal did with his stuff. And that's interesting because do we ever find out? I don't even know. So we don't know what Dougal did with his. Bug took his back to Malcolm Grant and he supposedly used it in the way it was meant. However that was, he at least used it to help his people, probably. But Hector Cameron, who, as we know, since they deigned to give us that little spittle of Jocasta telling us her story about how she lost her daughter. She lost all of her daughters, but she lost her last daughter who was shot as they were trying to escape just before or just after Culloden, right? And they had that small chest of gold hidden underneath, and that was Hector Cameron's third. And so they ran away to protect themselves, and that was how they got rich and bought
River Run,
enslaved people, had River Run built, the pan. The plantation, all of it. And so, yeah, Mr. Bug had realized Hector had taken it to River Run. And once, because he, again, I don't know how many times ago in the book, Jamie, like, they're there, oh my Lord, probably 85 times a year. No, not really. But they're there quite often enough to be familiar with the layout, right? In the book, at least, Bug is Jamie's, he's his factor. He's his right-hand man there on the Ridge. And he trusts him a lot. And he goes with him. Not just goes with him to River Run. He goes on his own to make deliveries or pick things up. He's trusted.
Oh God.
I still stay. You're going to get a little bit of this tonight, Summer, so just be ready. I still don't think the show did a very good job of showing us how involved Bug was. Again, not front and center, but we didn't get a feeling for how often he went. We may have gotten that once, and I'm serious. Like, we may have gotten like once that he went, to be, there's a consistency to what I'm saying. I'm building up to what I'm saying. But yes, so he tells us, but again, telling us is great. Showing us is better. Telling us all of this and pretty much the rest of this episode, telling us or even showing us right now here at this end point or turning point is a whole bunch. Now Bug saying the story about the gold, that's not too little too late, because he never was going to out himself for doing all the stuff, right? That's meant to be here. But talking about all of his trips and how he could see it, how he found it, and about being in his crypt, it's like, okay, the crypt, fine. Like, they definitely left that out. I mean, whatever. They didn't have time. I okay. But the fact that he went there so often, he could little by little, like,
take a
start
piece
to,
at a time, yeah.
Hide it. And even if they didn't endear, say they changed nothing with Mrs. Bug, okay? Nothing. She was her off-putting self, like, the entire time. Nothing changed. I know reasons that have been given for why they did what they did, but if literally all they had done was not change a thing with Mrs. Bug, but still, and it would have been so shocking, not to us maybe, but if they had somehow arranged for Mrs. Bug to smother Lionel Brown, that at least, you don't have to like her, but that at least makes you
they let Marsley poison him. Yeah.
What's going on, right? It's gone. I get it. And I thought that was, I don't want to say a cheap shot. It wasn't a cheap shot. It was, anyway. So it makes sense we're getting the backstory of the gold here. Yes. And it makes sense that he's telling us now that he did all of this, how he stole it. What I'm saying is what they've shown Bug to be is not consistent with what he says he is and what he has done. That's the inconsistency that I am seeing all over this gold stuff. Okay. So, he's like, so he took it little by little and he's been hiding it, or we don't know yet, but I just put it in. He said he's been hiding it, quote, somewhere you'll never find it. Cause Jamie's like, where did you put it? He's like, oh, I'll tell you. And Jamie says, okay, you and your wife, you need to leave the ridge, take the gold that you have, you know, take this bar, whatever, take your stuff. You need to leave.
Yeah. They're like, bye. And then he walks away like surprised. They won't let us stay. They're making us leave. What did you expect?
He runs into Mrs. Bug as they're being and tells her that they're being sent away. And she says, okay, get ready for some more. Summer's going to love this. Probably not. She says, we put in our time. Oh, yeah, that I can kind of see, maybe, like, not just on the ridge, but like in life, like, because they're elderly. I would almost give them that. But saying we've slaughtered their pigs, we've cleaned their floors, we've done this and we've done that. I'm not saying that those characters have or have not. I'm saying the show has not, and yes, I will bleep myself. The show has not shown us this. It means zero to me. I do not believe it. They did not do this well. That's all I'm saying. I think the scene is good. I like the scene. I like the writing. I'm saying because they dropped the bugs from day one, it's too little too late. It makes no sense. Her age, their age, and what they've been through, for, you know, we've supported like the first rising or an earlier rising, and then now, and then the Stuarts, and now, you know, we're still poor, and now we're old, and we're on the ridge, and we're, you know, helping people here. It's our time. Like, that's enough. I get you. But the fact that she put in like, and she basically was like, we've done all of this and we've, you know, slaughtered their pigs. I'm not saying they didn't. I'm saying we didn't see anything that matches what she's saying. So it lands wrong. It lands falsely. So anyway, she says, we put in our time. We've done all of this and we've earned this. This is our time. Again, I don't have any problem with what she's saying, except for the part where it's like, we've done all of this for them, because that's BS for the show. Later that night, I'm just going to say what happened. I'm not going to say what they thought happened. Okay. Mrs. Bug is shot by Ian Zero as she digs up the gold. They thought it was Mr. Bug. And because when they call him out, the figure stands up and shoots at Jamie, And they were ready for this. They, because Jamie's over on one side, Ian's over on a different area, and Ian sees it or hears it, and then mm-hmm. he shoots Mr. Bug. But it's not Mr. Bug, it's Mrs. Bug. That, I thought, you know what? Background aside.
Well, yeah.
They did that. That was pretty damn faithful. Except for the part. I mean, it was kind of under the house. I don't know how they got to it, because like, did they like dig a hole next to the house and then bury it under? Like, that is not well explained at all. Now, I'm not upset that they didn't keep the white sow out of that. That's hard. Like, that's hard to keep, I get, right? But I don't, but it was in the ruins of the house, which means it was somehow under the house, which means it still kept the same place. And yet that seems a little far-fetched to me. Anywho, that was weird, but whatever. So anyway, I still think it's too little too late. The bugs were never friendly to the Frasers, ever. They were maybe less pissier on one day and less busy too.
Well, they were helping run the ridge. Like, Mrs. Bug was running the household, doing most of the cooking.
That's what I'm trying to say. I'm not saying she was never there. I'm saying we never got, the only time I remember seeing Mrs. Bug and being surprised that Mrs. Bug was doing all this work, the only time I remember, I'm not saying I'm right, I'm saying the only time I remember, is there was some kind of big festival. It was in five or six. Someone, maybe it was Brianna, no, it wasn't their wedding. Anyway, it was some thing where people were coming to the ridge, right? And there were all kinds of like pies and fruit pies, meat pies, whatever. All kinds of food was prepared. And they had it on this big table layout. And someone was like walking by and like taking a little bite. And Mrs. Bug was like, you know, so, you know, implying, you know, she said something like, oh, we worked so hard for this. Or it was either implied or stated that she had done a lot of the cooking. So again, I'm not saying they showed us zero. I'm saying the relationship was 100% not there. 100% not there. It wasn't there. She may have helped them. They may have helped them. And they may have worked on the ridge. I'm not saying they did not work. I'm saying it was not portrayed in any way to portray them anything but rotten old people who are rude. And yes, I feel for them. I had a little tear for Mrs. Bug. I don't hate the characters. I mean, you know, we all have our opinions. But what I'm saying is I think the show did a disservice. They were never consistent. I never saw them friendly ever to the Frasers. They didn't even fake it. In the book, they faked it at least, thus ingratiating themselves to the reader much more than to any viewer of Stars. That's my opinion. Okay. Claire is, now that she is wearing a piece of Lizzie's clothing, she's in, I am not saying it's the identical color, but in a similar blue to that of season one. Of the coat. Remember the coat?
Yes.
Kind of like a little teal color. That may not have been on purpose. Ian says, oh my God, never effing end. Okay, this is Mrs. Bug's tribute episode, so I'll include it. But I'm just like, oh my gosh, like it's so over the top. Ian's crying, and I get it. Like, he didn't, obviously, it was an accident. He did not mean to kill or injure Mrs. Bug.
Yeah. Yeah, but he sure meant to kill Archbug.
Well, kill or injure, yeah. And the thing is, he's sad because, number one, he didn't mean to kill her, right? Like, that's the bottom line. But past that, he's now reminiscing about their good times. I'm not saying it didn't happen off camera. I'm saying I don't believe it, because they show us diddle effing squat. Quote, he says, she took care of me, of all of us. Yeah? When? How?
Hey, she helped cut Claire's hair off.
Oh, Lord.
When she was sick.
You know, I don't blame. You can have a lot of opinions. I don't blame that on anybody, because you know who else helped? Malva.
Malva.
Exactly. Hold the phone. Were the writers smoking something? Like, who the hell did she take care of? I know in her speech. So she helped out, but she was never shown as a fixture in their household ever. That's my point. And that she never ingratiated herself to the Frasers, on our screens at least. So I'm glad they went straight to the funeral. There's nothing else to do, right? That's what happened.
I just want to know how they auditioned the bugs 3 years ago to roles that had no speaking lines, to all of a sudden, 3 years later, they have like monologues.
girl, this is what I'm trying to tell you. Okay, so maybe there was thought into it. I don't know. See, that's the whole thing. I have no, absolutely no idea.
Because could you imagine if they just hired people for the look that they had because they didn't really have to have any lines for the first two seasons and all of a sudden being like, okay, here's your monologue.
Look, you got to act now.
And they're like, oops.
So I'm glad they went straight to the funeral. Mr. Bug shows up and he brings a pin. Now, they did not, you know, I don't know if it's implied in the book. I don't think it's explicitly stated. But absolutely zero words or lines were given about that brooch or pin. This is more for our, I mean, Summer may have forgotten too, but this is more for our listeners, for our non-book reader listeners. First of all, and I'm not going to go back to it, I promise you. I'm just curious because I've been ranting myself. I'm curious, did the non-readers who watch the show, so show only fans, is this bug stuff out of left field for you? I want to know. It's probably not as out of left field because, I mean, it may seem odd to you, but there's nothing to compare it to, right? Whereas we have all the comparisons in the world and it is just like wackadoodle. So I'm curious, like, let us know. Regarding the brooch, can you describe the brooch? I don't remember like what the shape, if it was a figure or not, I don't know. But do you remember like the color, the proportion?
No.
No, okay. So the one thing I remember, not from the book. I mean, I remember the material it was made out of. It was gold. It was a pin that he or they, she may have known about it and asked him for it, but it was a pin that they had made from some of the
gold.
Yeah, from some of the gold. The
Frenchman's gold.
I thought it was a nice little touch. You know, they didn't tell us. And if you're not a book reader, you may not even have remembered it if you have read. But I think if you're just a show watcher, I don't know that you would make that connection because there is a point of showing him putting the pin on her, the brooch on her, mm-hmm. but it doesn't like close up focus for 20 seconds on the brooch, right? But I do think that's a nice touch. So I it's the little things like that that, you know, that's the thing. Outside of the fact that they never ingratiated the bugs to us at all, which is a huge thing, but outside of that, this was pretty darn sticking freaking close to the book.
I don't think they needed to ingratiate us to them. They showing them all living together and working together on the ridge. If they trusted them to be in the house, we as watchers were supposed to trust them to be in the house. So I don't think they neglected anything. I think that you are definitely ranting and you have your feelings and you can have your feelings. But I don't think it is as big of a problem for especially non-book readers as it is.
I am curious. That's why I asked if the show only watchers had any trouble accepting that the bugs, quote, took care of them or were super friendly to them. Because that, again, it's not, okay, it's two things. I remember this. It's not just them not showing us them, you know, being buddy-buddy in the house, right? Because mm-hmm. that is something. Like, they didn't show us a lot of camaraderie, definitely not friendship. But they also not only didn't show us friendship, even if it was false, they showed us the exact opposite. She was an absolute bitch to her, to Claire. So that's what I'm trying to say. It wasn't just, I think I actually could agree with you that you don't have to show us buddy-buddy. You don't have to show us, you know, all the nicey-nicey. I could probably get on board with the fact that, you know, they were trusted insofar as they, you know, they were in the house and they worked in the house and all. Like, I could almost agree with you and say, you know, I can go there, right? Except for the fact that production went out of its way to show us how antagonistic they were toward the Frasers. If you did just the first part, then I think there'd be a defense of, well, you know, they didn't have to show us everything being nicey-nicey because they were there and they worked. Except that they also were outwardly, publicly, over and over, extremely rude and ugly to the Frasers.
I don't remember that.
Oh, no, it is.
Because I remember them I remember other people from the Fisher folk being problematic. And she looked a lot, and there was a man and a woman who looked a lot like the bugs, but I don't think it was them. And I could be wrong.
I can be wrong. So I'm not wrong that some people were hella rude. It is just like you said, you could be wrong that it was or wasn't the bugs. I could be wrong that it was the bugs. But I think it's more of a chance of being wrong if it only happened like once, like, oh, I just, you know, got them wrong. Like I misidentified someone, mm-hmm. right? That happens. And proof of that maybe not all the times I thought it happened, but enough times. Proof of that is when they were burying the body, although, yeah, I don't care who. Anyone shows up, I'm going to be really wary, right? So it doesn't have to be an enemy. That's worse, but I'd be wary and careful no matter who showed up. But they were like, hella, oh, Lord. What's going to happen now? I'm just saying, with Ian crying, Ian crying over the fact that he killed her, I believe, because he, that was on accident. He absolutely did not want to do that. That's understandable. Him saying she took good care of us. I'm like, when? That's what I'm saying. They did not show us that. That's what I'm trying to say. They didn't show us that. What were you going to say? So after Bug shows up and puts her pin on her, Arch asks Claire to sing. So she sings Ave Maria. Schubert. It was really nice. And I love when she was done with her singing and it was mostly instrumental in the back. You know, Bear, I loved the, I know he didn't write that. Obviously that was Schubert, but I love the instrumental background and how they made, I teared up a lot. And it's not that I super cared for Mrs. Bug, but I had compassion for her loss of her life and for Arch's loss, right? Mm-hmm. I had a great compassion at that moment, and that was because of production. That was the script, that was the blocking, that was the acting, that was the instrumental, right? That was the music. So again, they're so talented. It's just so sad what was not done. And I think Bear and the filming was so effective in making the viewer feel grief. And then Jamie adding in the poem Death Be Not Proud by John Donne. Oh, it was absolutely gorgeous. It was like that music and that scene and that poem. Oh, my goodness. It was gorgeous. And then we get some, obviously not the soundtrack because there's no soundtrack in the book.
No.
But other than that, the lines, the things that happened, we were so, that's why I said, we got so much book. This was so much book goodness. It's ridiculous. Like a lot of this episode, right? Especially on the ridge. Ian, still feeling bad, offers his life to Bug. After the burial's done, he says, you know, it was my fault. I did not mean it, but it was my fault. And so I'm offering my life for what I have done. And Bug's like, piss off, kid.
It's like, it's not enough.
It is too easy. Okay, come here. Give me your hand.
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Do you think for the rest of this, not all of it, but for the rest of this season, we're going to come back to, after every backstory from the 1700s, it's going to end with Roger and Bree reading a letter?
I thought you were going to say.
No.
Do you think for the rest of the season, you're going to keep going back and bashing on the books?
No.
No. Because the bugs are gone. Bugs are gone. Sorry. Mrs. Bug is gone. So bugs, plural, are gone, right? Ooh, that's interesting. I mean, I don't think they're going to do that at the end every time. I think we'll get letters sprinkled throughout, absolutely. But I don't think they're going to necessarily end or start with the letter.
Well, because like that was kind of the way they did it in this episode. And I was like, I wonder if they're going to keep doing that.
I mean, I'm not going to complain if they do. I love it. Believe me, I love it.
Okay.
So he's like, give me your hound. And he's like, but he didn't do anything. And Mr. Bug is like,
exactly.
Exactly.
I'll tell you what, though.
Exactly.
Mrs. Bug did do things. She did.
She was
rifling through the house.
You can't argue or level with someone who is number one in grief and also number two is not going to be leveled with. But yes, you're exactly right. It's not the same. Number one is not the same. Human, dog. But yeah, all of that. And he says, quote, when you've something worth taking, you'll see me again. That I promise you, unquote. And that I love, not because of a threat to our dear Ian. No, dear listener. This is paving the way for Ian's storyline and the intro of some new beloved characters at some point. Maybe by the end, probably by the, yeah, definitely, I think by the end of the season.
Yeah, they've already cast them and shown everybody.
Well, we know they're cast. Stop it. I'm just saying.
Now,
I just mean they may not show up until they could be in 7B, but I think they have to be in 7A. They have to be.
They're moving at a good pace. I feel like they'll get there.
I'm telling you, I'm like, I'm loving, I'm like, Yeah. What is that phrase?
You're loving it. You.
Yes. Thank you. How did you get that from what I did?
Because I know you.
I'm loving it. You're loving it. What is that? Burger King?
It's McDonald's.
Oh my God. Like from the 80s, right? When we were but small.
I'm pretty sure they still do it. And it's ba da ba ba ba.
Oh, you're loving it. I'm loving it. I'm loving it. Yeah, but we didn't have that beat when we were in the 80s.
No, they did. They had the ba-da-ba-ba-ba, and they got rid of the...
Really?
And then they got rid of the I'm loving it, and now they just say ba-da-ba-ba-ba, and then they have the I'm loving it show up on the screen, generally.
Do you remember that patty cake we used to do? How did it start?
The Big Mac song?
Yes.
Big Mac filet fish, quarter pound of french fries,
ice cold milkshake.
Thick shake, sundaes and apple pies.
Sundaes, apple pies. You deserve a break today at McDonald's.
Yeah, let's go.
Let's go. Okay. You're welcome, dear listener.
There was also two all beef patty, special sauce, lettuce, cheese, pickles, onions,
lettuce, cheese, pickles, onions, sesame seed bun.
Oh my God. I need to stop talking.
There's also, oh my goodness. Oh my gosh. This is not it at all. And there's several versions. We may have even talked about this like on a much earlier episode, like, I don't know, 100 or 300 episodes ago. Say, say, oh, playmate, come out and play with me. Mm-hmm. And bring your dollies three, climb up my apple tree, slide down my rainbow into my cellar door, and we'll be
jolly friends.
Jolly friends forevermore, more, 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 more. And then, you know, the backwards one, right? Like the evil one is...
Say, say, oh, enemy. I know. Say, we don't have to continue this conversation.
Okay, so then that one. I know. And then the other thing is not related to that. What's the one where you go...
Down by the banks.
Down by the banks. Got it. So Arch pieces out. Jamie nails down the site for the big house, part two, and shows Claire. And the conversation that they have is Claire asks Jamie, when you die, do you want to be buried in Scotland? And he's like, doesn't matter. And she's like, you're not going to ask me? And he just won't answer. He's like, I can't think of you dead, Claire. So stop. It's not going to happen. I'm not going to talk about it.
I mean, it was a easy way out. He's like, I don't even want to discuss it.
Thank you. Exactly. Like a man. So what are they going to build? And he says, you know, I think before we build, we need to go to Scotland and take Ian home to his mom. We'll leave in a few months. And also, by the way, it's handy.
See, and that's just putting off building the house. He's like, I don't want to build the house anymore. I want to do something else.
Also, another good reason to go to Scotland is that I promised myself I would never face my son across the barrel of a gun.
He thinks he's going to be gone for the length of the war.
Exactly, because he knows, maybe not that to that date, but he knows a year. He knows from Claire and Brianna and Roger, but especially Brianna and Claire, how long this Revolutionary War is going to last. And he knows it'll be a few years. It's not going to be quick. One of the ways, or maybe the only way, to keep that promise to himself was not to face his son across the barrel of a gun is to just not be there, not be recruited, not to be put into, you know, not to be forced into service, into like a...
You could be pressed into service.
Yeah, but typically it's not military. Usually that's Navy. But I guess it's any service, yeah. He's kind of slyly saying that, or communicating to Claire that, like, you know, I think we're going to go stay at Lallybroch for a good few years. That's his plan. At least that's what we have evidence of, right? And it seems, okay, then that night they're in bed, Jamie's praying. And I'm like, okay, just like, because there were so, okay, in the books, Jamie's quite religious, right? Or he's faithful. There was a lot said by Diana about the show, like the first, you know, three years or whatever, that... Yeah, they never denied he was Catholic. They never denied he had, you know, he was of a certain religion. Like, that was never, they never denied it or changed it. But they absolutely did not include it as an important part of his personhood, right? And I remember Diana saying several times, or writing or interviewing, saying several times that, yeah, he's still Catholic, but the writers or production, maybe this started with Ron, I don't know, but it sounds like that I'm making up, these are my words now, but it was something to the effect of, there's not a lot of people of faith who are, let's say, devout or religious, because you can be a person of faith and not be like devout, right? It sounds like there's not someone maybe who's devout or whatever on the writing staff. Okay, fine, whatever. But also, it's not something that is common today, right? Meaning to have shows with with leading men or leading figures, or maybe especially men, who are really strong in their faith, whatever that means, or at least in their Catholic faith, who knows. So that's why I wrote, it seems Jamie's found religion in his older age, because he's been doing a lot of praying this year, this season. That's all I'm saying.
They've been a little busy.
He's like, okay, now I got to include God in this because I need help.
Well, my house just burned down. I didn't die. Maybe that made me think about my mortal soul a little bit more. So maybe I should talk to God.
Maybe so. And this at the end of his little prayer here, it's the line straight from the books. Let me be enough, Lord, that I may be enough for her. And the next morning, Jamie is telling Claire of one of his dreams of the future. He says he saw Mandy and Roger and Bree, and they walked up to the door of the, this is what we know it to be. Of course, I'm describing it in words we know. He didn't know these words, but he sees Mandy and Roger and Bree. They walked up to the door of the manse and Fiona answered it. And they were saying how Mandy was well, or he says he saw Mandy and she was well. And it's very entertaining. He wonkily describes a telephone.
Yeah.
Dude, home,
if we'd been playing Pictionary and he was drawing what he was describing, I would not have known what he was talking about.
Exactly.
And I know from the books that he was describing the telephone. But I was like, what is he talking about?
What does this even mean?
I couldn't track it and build it in my mind's eye.
And then the next scene is, again, they move so fast, and I love it. I'm not complaining at all, but they move so dinkin' fast. So they're like, they take the gold, they find the gold, right? Under the house or wherever it is, they dig it up. They find the gold. Mm-hmm. Well, they don't have to find the gold. They killed the person who was digging it, so they know exactly where to go.
They knew where to go.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So they get the gold, and they, a certain amount, not all of it. That's all we know, a certain amount, not all of it. They melt it down.
He just melted down all that he was going to melt. Everything else was going to be saved.
Hidden. So as they prepare to go on the road, they melt down some of the gold balls and they rub them in soot, I guess, to disguise it as lead shot.
They melt down. They don't. They melt down the gold bars into musket balls. I'm just adding the words that you were missing. You said they melt down the balls.
They melt down the gold into balls.
Thank you.
In the shape of
musket balls.
Of lead shot. Yes.
Yeah.
And they rub it in or roll it in, whatever. Well, actually some kind of grease, right? Probably was that goose
look
grease?
Like, yeah, it looked like an oil of some kind.
And then the soot or something.
Soot.
And then we learn, okay, so they did keep the Spaniard's cave. I'm not going to go off or talk about that. We got it. So that's all. Plus I'm tired. So you're welcome. Jamie's like, what?
I'm just saying that was a really big cave. And I have a hard time believing other people haven't found it.
Girl. Supposedly, okay,
over the years, like, they think it's going to last there for 200 plus years, that no one's going to go in this cave.
You're funny. So in the books, if I'm not mistaken, it's true what he said. He had found it with Jem. So we learn about the Spaniard's cave. I'm like, oh, so they kept it. Great. So they're going to hide the rest of the gold there. It was something that he had found inadvertently with Jem. I mean, they left out any kind of flashback or scene of him finding it with Jem. And my guess is, well, no, it doesn't matter my guess. I'm done with that. And then we get Claire's VO as she writes a letter that they're leaving the ridge and going to Scotland. And then Jamie's VO as he writes some of the words that readers are like, oh my gosh, it's here. This is the backstory. This is filling in the backstory of whatever we need to know about the Spaniard's cave and how it relates to Jem. Quote, I wish to tell you of the disposition of some property that was once held in trust for the something, I can't read my writing, for an Italian gentleman. It is unwise to carry all of it with us, and therefore I have left it in a place of safety. Jem knows the place. If you should at some time have need of this property, tell him the Spaniard guards it. He will know what it means. Unquote. And that goes straight into the Mackenzies, 20th century. They're reading that letter, and Roger mentions to Bree, oh yeah, there's all kinds of legends about lost Jacobite gold, and they agree they're not gonna go bug Jem just yet, although they both are kind of itching to. They're not going to do it. And Bree wants to slow your roll on the letters.
Let's be honest. The safest thing, if they're not going to go to get it right now, is for no one to know it. Because the more people who know it, so if Roger knows it or Bree knows it and somebody else tries to get the information from them, then there's just more loose lips.
Loose lips sinking the ships.
Yep.
Bree wants to slow the roll on the letters. Once they're gone, once we're done with the letters, it'll seem like they're really gone. And Roger says, quote, "We'll ration them out when we get back to Boston," unquote. So they are absolutely not planning on staying. And then she goes, "Before we leave, I want to show you a little place." Mm-hmm. And she wants to take him to Leatherbrook, of course. Back on the ridge, Jamie gives Claire her cock handle knife.
You know, they didn't even mention that. They were like,
I'm telling you.
I know.
All she said was, "It fits my hand really well."
Yeah. And he didn't say his line where he's like, "I've had that wrapped around."
And I was like, book readers are going to go, ha ha. But it's like, you're going to go so far as to say, "Fits my hand." And you're not going to I don't know. It would have been maybe a little crass. Doesn't matter. But book readers can read into that. But yeah, it's the cock handle knife. There you go. Then Leatherbrook, it's Mid-Hope. It's so pretty. As they're looking around, the Roger and Bree theme also dances around. Quickly, back to the ridge. They're giving final goodbyes to Lizzie and her dudes. Back to Leatherbrook. Before they can leave, a realtor comes up and asks them if they're interested in it. And boom, we know they're going to stay in Scotland.
Just the random arrival of a real estate agent.
Yes.
It would have made, cute. I didn't hate it, but I am saying it would have just been easier just to have a sign that says for sale. Because the odds of them driving up there and then the real estate agent just happening to show up as they're getting ready to leave.
My guess is she's not too far and she saw, I don't think the place gets visited a lot, and either someone saw them visit or a car drive up and then called her, or she lives kind of close and she happened to see them, but I have no evidence. That's just my thought.
Just saying.
And finally, on the ridge, as they're leaving, Claire gets to say a proper goodbye to Adso.
She finds Adso.
Cute little dude.
And then she finally lets herself cry.
Yeah. Yes. And she tells Jamie, "You will always be enough."
No. It was a good episode. I liked it. I liked the pacing of it. I think last week's episode is still hands down my favorite.
Oh, yeah. That's kind of hard to beat.
Oh, so good.
That was so full of tragedy and emotion. Yeah.
Yeah. So that is our episode discussion. Join us next time when we will be discussing episode 4 entitled A Most Uncomfortable Woman.
Again, a special thanks to co-producer Rebecca. To find out more about how you can support us on Patreon, visit outlanderpod.com/Patreon.
And if you just want to talk about Outlander with people, maybe you're in a small area and nobody around you watches the show and you just need to talk to somebody, feel free to visit our group at www.outlanderpod.com/group. And if you've got a hankering for some Outlander Pod branded merch, visit our shop at www.outlanderpod.com/shop.
If you haven't subscribed to our newsletter, please do. We invite you. The Outlander Pod Gazette is what it's called. You can find out how to subscribe at outlanderpod.com/newsletter. And thank you, as always, so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at @outlanderpod.